All right. We're going to look at Hanukkah today. And so let's start with a word of prayer. Father, thank you for this day and this opportunity to study your word and to understand the life here in the land. Father, we pray for your guidance and your direction. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen.
All right. What are the festivals here in the land?
What are they?
What are some of the festivals?
The Pesach and the Shavuot.
Okay. And the Pesach Shavuot.
All right.
That's okay. I remember that one.
And festival, you spell a little bit different in English.
Well, that's it's probably spelled different everywhere else too.
Sukkot for Purim.
Okay, Purim.
Rosh Hashanah, Bet Anan, Trumpets and Trumpets. Or Bet Anan, Yom Kippur. And Hanukkah, which is not in the Tanakh.
Hanukkah?
Only in the Brit Hadashah.
We're missing something here, people.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 1, 2, 5, 6.
Ah, Yom Kippur. Rosé. Alright. So what's the purpose of Passover? What are we celebrating? What do we remember?
Exodus out of Egypt.
Exodus, when the people go out from Egypt.
Okay, Exodus. Double.
And then in Passover is
the giving of the law.
Okay. It's a harvest and the giving of the law.
Matan Torah.
Okay, Sukkot.
Feast of Tabernacles, living in booths.
Okay, so the wandering.
In the desert, wandering in the desert. God with us, Emmanuel. Christmas.
Purim.
Esther.
Rosh Hashanah.
Feast of Trumpets.
So what's the purpose of that?
Is that New Year?
Yes.
New Year?
Well, it's not New Year, but anyway.
Well, it's one of the New Years.
One of the New Years, okay.
Hanukkah? Well, Yom Kippur is Day of Atonement, so...
Hanukkah is a feast of dedication.
Alright.
Hanukkah, feast of dedication.
Hanukkah.
Dedication.
So
here we have what? Deliverance? Did you guys say? With this, the Exodus. Shavuot is the harvest, the law. Wandering, again, is a sense of deliverance. Care, God's presence.
Well, Purim is deliverance.
Purim is deliverance. Trumpet will be the New Year, Day of Atonement. This sense is deliverance from sin.
Right.
And so Hanukkah would also be deliverance. Is deliverance. So we. So the purpose behind these, we see them as being important times.
What's Hanukkah delivering from?
From the rule of the Greeks. We're going to get into that. We're going to talk about
that. Hanukkah would also be deliverance, but also provision.
Provision. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, so what book do we have here? We have Exodus, the Torah, Shavuot. Where do we find that?
Also
Leviticus.
Yeah. Okay, Leviticus. We'll just go one at a time there. Sukkot would also be
Leviticus. 23.
Purim.
Esther.
Esther. Rosh Hashanah.
Leviticus.
Leviticus.
Okay. Hanukkah.
Leviticus would also say Day of Atonement is Leviticus again, right?
Hanukkah, John chapter 10.
Yeah.
What?
All right. But that's. We don't have John yet, and we have Hanukkah being celebrated.
What?
We don't have John yet when Hanukkah starts to be celebrated. So we have
the feast of John chapter 10. It's the feast of dedication.
All these feasts, but this is the only one.
BC.
Okay. We don't have in the Tanakh. Okay. So all these here are, but this one is missing.
So when do they start celebrating it?
Well, we're going to get to that.
Yes.
One thing, we have our daily readings through the parashah. What? Do you know what scriptures they use for Hanukkah?
I left it at
home. I don't remember.
You stumped for the first time.
Yep.
Number 7.
Is that the parashah?
No. That's the parashah.
No, that's for Hanukkah.
That's for Hanukkah time.
The Hanukkah reading.
That's the Hanukkah reading.
What verse?
7:1 and following. All of the 7th chapter. They also use 1 Kings.
Numbers.
We have Zechariah 2. 14 through 4:7. We have 1 Kings passage in 7.
We do get these things
downstairs when they
also they will use Psalm 30 as a passage this time because it speaks about the dedication of the house. You also have 2 Chronicles 7, we talk about Solomon and dedicating of the temple. And you also, in Nehemiah, will have passages from the dedication of the walls. So the emphasis on the readings at this time are on the idea of dedication. In fact, in the Mishnah, we have in Megillah 3:4-6, it says, on the new moon of Adar, which coincide with the Sabbath, they read the Perikop of Shekels, which would be Exodus 30. And let's see, where's the one for? And at all times they suspend or interrupt the set order of the readings of the Torah for new moons, Hanukkah, Purim, fast, set delegations, the Day of Atonement. Then down in 3:6 it says, at Hanukkah they read the princes, which is the Numbers 7:1 and following. So we're talking about a long tradition that they've had during the Hanukkah time of reading. So Hanukkah comes about.
Excuse me, the second Bible verse
of Zechariah. I'm sorry. My spelling is only rivaled by my penmanship.
No, it's not, I guess.
When I was in school, they used to have sections, so you were with all the same students all the way through school. But then one year they decided to divide us up in our ability to spell. That was an eighth grade class. We had three guys in our class that were already driving. They were that old. I was in the worst starting class, so
just look and say, yep, that's the way he spells. He does it.
You know, David, in Numbers 7, verse 84, the word Hanukkah is mentioned.
Yes.
Where are you?
Numbers 7, verse 84. Because it's about the dedication of the...
And see, that's what Hanukkah means.
The Hanukkah is the Mizbeach, the dedication. And Hanukkah Mizbeach is what we sing in the Hanukkah song. The dedication of the altar.
All right, now, when we talk about the timeline, let me give you the timeline because that's... We'll go back to 3:36. We won't use that color again.
It's good. It's hard to see.
Yeah, 3:36... That is when Alexander the Great succeeds his father, Philip of Macedonia. It's all going to come together because this is important about what we're looking at.
Then 332, Alexander conquers Egypt.
Just recap. He succeeds who? Who was Alexander?
Philip of Macedonia. That was his father.
That was his dad.
That was his dad. And but prior to this, who would, do you know who Alexander's teacher was? Anybody know that? Aristotle. And so you can see when he, as he goes through in this desire to Hellenize everywhere he goes, all this has laid the foundation of his teacher, Aristotle. So, interesting. All right, 331, Alexander conquers the Persian Empire.
Now, wait a minute, you've gone too far. 36 was the first figure. Now,
that's when he got
the power. The next one was 332. What happened then?
He conquers Egypt.
Okay, sorry to be slow.
No problem.
Next one was 331.
He conquers the Persian Empire. So he's moving across. He's moving toward the east.
Gentlemen, this is BCE.
This is BC.
I'm bad with numbers, but I didn't know that.
Who's BC? Greatest comic ever written. BC. More theology in BC than all the other comics put together. Anyways.
It's me and numbers. It's not the problem with BC, BCE, or anything else.
323, Alexander dies. They've reached into India. 323. 23, at this time.
And they've reached India already.
Yeah, they've reached India. He dies in Babylon, which is appropriate. His kingdom is divided between his four kings. One takes the area of Macedonia. And back in Greece. One, which is the Ptolemies, taken Egypt and down through there. The Seleucids take the area of Syria and that upper area. And then
do you write these four up? It's really good. Could you write up the four?
I don't know all four names. I just know the Seleucids and the Ptolemies. Okay. Those are the ones.
Yeah, those are the important ones.
Those are the important ones.
Seleucids.
Seleucids.
The Ptolemy.
And the Ptolemies. Ptolemies. Seleucid.
Plus two more.
Yeah, plus two more.
Great.
And then from 322 Think with me, this is all going to make sense in a minute. The generals fight over who's going to be supreme. Did anybody be surprised by that? The four generals, they're not satisfied with having a kingdom each. They want what Alexander had. And it'll never be. So, but they fight over it. All right. 301 to 198. The Ptolemies rule over Israel in this area. Who's the Ptolemy queen? Anybody know a Ptolemy queen of history? That we don't usually associate with the Ptolemies?
Cleo.
Cleo's a Ptolemy. So anyway, so they rule over Israel in this area. Now, here is where we pick up the story in full. Wedge in 198, the Seleucids take control of Israel and this area. Some of you might know a lot about is Antiochus Epiphanes. His desire, the dream of Alexander, in a sense, is passed through him in wanting to Hellenize everywhere they go. Bring the Greek culture. Do the Greek ways. And so Antiochus Epiphanes takes over Jerusalem, desecrates the altar, sacrificing a pig and upon it, and they begin this process of trying to Hellenize Israel. They have followers because they have people who want to be empowered or want to fight. They are willing to do this. And this is what it, this is where it becomes so key. Here's the areas that they want. Torah, stop being read.
Sabbath.
Sabbath.
Circumcision.
Circumcision.
And also the wedding for a woman.
Oh, what's that?
Torah, Sabbath, circumcision, and food laws. Dietary.
Ah, yeah, the food laws. Yeah, the food laws. Food.
Do you see how devastating that is?
Sure.
Because that this here also includes all the feasts.
All the scripture.
This takes away all the remembrance of what God has done for the children of Israel in the celebration. This takes away the day of honoring, the day of rest that God has commanded them to do. This takes away the sign of the covenant. This takes away what? What does it take away? It's not a small thing.
No.
It's their discourse.
They're being a set apart.
They're being set apart. They you know who's Jewish and who's not by their food laws a lot of times. Because they won't eat certain things and they will eat others. So when we come to this time period, we come to a very crucial time in the history, in the life of the children of Israel. And we sometimes we go over it because we say, you know, some more days. We go
586, temple destroyed. 512, they come back and the temple is rebuilt. And then we got Ezra in the 400s. And
last book of the Tanakh that we look at, we say, is Malachi, written in 400. And then we have this terrible idea that from 400 BC until the first century, you know, the writings, say 40 AD, that God is silent in his writings. He wasn't silent. There was a lot going on. And part of it is we miss the crucial situation that happened in this land. So, in the midst of all this, 167.
Let's
see if you recognize this name.
Judah Maccabeus.
Oh, this is before Judas.
Yeah,
his father.
Oh, right.
Matthias.
You might not be very good at spelling. But you're awesome with your numbers.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
Impressed, you know. Yeah.
Well, see, that's because of my sports. You know, I do the statistics. Anyways. So.
I'm the opposite. I can spell, but I don't want to know one number from another.
Mattathias has several sons. And they're putting the pressure now is becoming really great to Hellenize. And so these are being forced upon them. And like I said, we have people kind of almost mutilating themselves to show they're not circumcised to be able to. Because one of the big things they bring in, what's one of the things they bring in Greek culture is the gymnasium. Yeah, and the baths. You know, you don't go around with your towels wrapped around you like you do today or a nice bathing suit or whatever. It's the way you came in the world, the way you bathe. That's the way they... So there was no hiding the fact that...
I don't bathe clothes now.
Well, that's okay. That's what we call...
You're not sexy.
But not, and we're talking in public. This is public.
I'm cheesy.
And so... they went down to Modi'in and said that they sacrificed a pig and that they were to swear allegiance to the king and eat it. One guy went up and did. Elias said, that's it, had enough.
Slaughtered him
and all the guys that came to represent the king. And then he became the Maccabean period Ben-Gurion. He called out, follow me to the desert. So him and his sons and followers of like mind followed him into the wilderness. And thus began the Maccabean revolt. Then in Mattathias doesn't last too long. 166 he dies. And my man Judas. Judas Maccabees, the hammer. He takes over. And he is he's not just a great general, he's a great man of faith. Because he, in when you read in the Apocrypha, because that's where we find most of this information about what went on, is recorded in 1st, 2nd Maccabees, 3rd and 4th Maccabees, found in the Apocrypha. And just won victory after victory, unbelievable odds. God gave him the victory over and over. And so, in 164, Judas defeats the Seleucid army at Betzur, and then they capture Jerusalem, and then they dedicate the temple area. And so, this is where we begin seeing Hanukkah begin celebrating the deliverance that God gave them. And because they were very, very clear about that, that it was God who had delivered them from that. Let me read just a section of...
Can I ask one question?
Yes, yeah, certainly.
Why they call it Maccabee? It was area they lived, come from, or...
You know, I think it was his name.
What was
his
name?
Matthias.
Maccabee.
Yeah, Maccabee.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
So that's.
It was this only this family who
stand. Well, they gave the leadership.
It was a big family.
Yeah, and it was a big family.
Big family.
And the sons, I think there's five sons.
Oh, okay. And I thought they would come from a special area.
No, but they're from the Modi'in.
They came from the Modi'in area, yeah. So now all that Modi'in area down there is named after the Maccabees.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, let me begin reading 1 Maccabees 4, verse 36. And Judah said to his brothers, see, our enemies are crushed. Let us go up to cleanse the sanctuary and dedicate it. So all the army assembled and went up to Mount Zion. And they saw this, there they saw the sanctuary desolate, the altar profaned, and the gates burned. In the courts they saw bushes sprung up as in a thicket, or as one of the mountains. They also saw the chambers of the priests in ruins. Then they tore their clothes and mourned with great lamentation. They sprinkled themselves with ashes and fell down on the ground. And when the signal was given with the trumpets, they cried out to heaven. Then Judas detailed men to fight against those in the citadel until he cleansed the sanctuary. You see, this is important to understand. Going through this again, the citadel, the city of David, was held by the supporters of the Seleucid king. But the temple area is what they captured. So they're up on the high ground. But you see throughout the Maccabean stories that they keep trying to hold on to there. And it shows you what a stronghold the city of David itself was. How hard it was to conquer it.
Wait, we're not talking about the city of David, we're talking about the temple.
Yeah, but he's dedicating. But I'm saying the supporters of the Seleucids held the city of David, the city.
Right. And are we talking about the city of David, old city of David that we know now, or are we talking about
the same area?
I think it's the same area.
Same area. Yes.
So below.
Yeah.
Citadel.
They
couldn't take the area.
Right. Yes.
Very interesting. They mean by Joshua, you said Citadel. Citadel, you said.
Yeah.
That's new. You're young from Dave.
That's right.
Right?
No. That's it. The city of David.
So far to the
city of
David that we know today.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
He chose blameless priests devoted to the law, and they cleansed the sanctuary and removed the defiled stones to an unclean place. They deliberated what to do about the altar of the burnt offering, which had been profaned. And they thought it best to tear it down, so it would not be a lasting shame to them that the Gentiles had defiled it. So they tore down the altar, and they stored the stones in a convenient place on the temple hill until a prophet should come to tell them what to do with it. I like that. They're waiting for the Lord's guidance. They then took unhewn stones, as the law directs, and built a new altar like the former one. They also rebuilt the sanctuary and the interior of the temple and consecrated the courts. They made new holy vessels and brought the lampstand, the altar of incense, and the table into the temple. Then they offered incense on the altar and lit the lamp on the lampstand, and they gave light in the temple. They placed the bread on the table, hung up the curtains. Thus they finished all the work that they had undertaken. Let's see, where are they going through? Okay. Early in the morning on the 25th day of the ninth month, which is Kislev, which is the month of Kislev, in the 148th year, they arose and offered sacrifice as the Lord directs on the new altar of the burnt offering they had built. At the very season, on the very day that the Gentiles had profaned it, it was dedicated with songs and harps and lutes and cymbals. All the people fell on their faces and worshipped and blessed heaven, who had prospered them. So they celebrated the dedication of the altar for 8 days and joyfully offered burnt offerings. They offered a sacrifice of well-being and a thanksgiving offering. They decorated the front of the temple with golden crowns and small shields. They restored the gates and fitted them with doors. There was a very great joy amongst the people, and the disgrace brought by the Gentiles was removed. Then Judas and his brothers, all the assembly of Israel, determined that every year at that season, the days of dedication of the altar should be observed with joy and gladness for 8 days, beginning with the 25th day of the month of Kislev. At that time, they fortified Mount Zion with high walls, strong towers all around to keep the Gentiles from coming and trampling them down as they had done before. Judas stationed a garrison to guard it, and he also fortified Beth-Zur to guard it so that the people might have a stronghold to face Edomim. So that's the passage in 1 Maccabees.
Where's Beth-Zur at?
Beth-Zur, let's see where it's at.
Did you write Beth-Zur?
Did they consider that a temple?
What?
What they just rebuilt.
Yes, well, that was the Temple Mount.
That's the temple.
That was the Temple Mount.
Is that the second temple?
It would have
It's the temple that Nehemiah sort of restarted to rebuild.
Yeah.
It's the temple.
You know, we go and we give the temple's numbers.
Herod comes in.
We give the temple's numbers, but we really... Because there's another temple. The temple comes and Zerubbabel puts up a temple.
Mm-hmm.
Then they fix that up when Ezra and Nehemiah and them come. And then you have Herod coming in and building the mammoth temple. So we call that the second temple, Herod, when Herod built. But in between the destruction of the first and the other, they're small ones. They're not the scale of the first or the second. And that's a...
But what you get from what you've just read... is the sense of the presence of God and the holiness of the sanctuary, the bowls and the incense and so on. I mean, we have the whole incense story,
yes.
Which is...
Oh, it is the Temple Mount, yes.
Could be really apocryphal, that bit. But anyway, you have the whole story about it, and it's absolutely focused. And then if you go back to Psalms and David, it's always, you know... A day in the... I'd rather be a doorkeeper in the temple of the Lord than dwell in the tents of ungodliness. It's always this central bit. Mm. And what Herod built, this huge massive thing, which we sort of see now in the tourist shops and pictures of it and so on. I'm not so sure that was the crucial thing. The crucial thing was where God was.
Mm-hmm.
This is my home. This is where I put my Shekinah glory. This is my neighborhood, you know. Mm. It's really Powerful.
And remember, when they come back and they rebuild, was Rubble's group, and they rebuild, and they looked at it, and the young people rejoiced. What did the older people do that had been there? They cried. Because it wasn't the same glory as the first time.
Right.
Yeah. And see, then you have Haggai and Zechariah and Malachi coming back, and they're giving them a hard time because they've kind of let the temple go. They've got it almost feels like they've done the bare necessity to have the temple there,
right.
And now they're all taking care of their own homes.
Right.
And that's where you find this push to you know, do a better job, because this is God's home and you're taking care of your homes, but you're not taking care of God's home.
I've got a blind spot. Where is the story Ichabod, the glory of the Lord has departed? What context and where does it come? So somebody tell
that's me. In Samuel.
Oh, so that's way back.
Yeah, that's way back.
That's way back. Okay, end of story.
Yeah, that was with Shiloh.
Yeah.
Okay, the other account of this is found in 2 Maccabees 10, and this is just through 1 through 8. Now Maccabeus and his followers, the Lord leading them on, recovered the temple in the city. They tore down the altars and built in the public square by the foreigners, and also destroyed the sacred precincts. They purified the sanctuary and made another altar of sacrifice. Then, striking fire out of a flint, they offered sacrifices after a lapse of 2 years, and they offered incense and lighted lamps and set out the bread of presence. When they had done this, they fell prostrate and implored the Lord that they might never again fall into misfortunes, but that if they should ever sin, that they might be disciplined by Him with forbearance and not handed over to the blasphemous and barbarous nations. It happened that on that same day on the sanctuary had been profaned by the foreigners, the purification of the sanctuary took place. That is the 25th day of the same month, which was Kislev. They celebrated for 8 days of rejoicing in the manner of the festival of Booths, and remembering how long, not long before, during the festival of Booths, they had been wandering the mountains in caves like wild animals. Therefore, carrying ivy wreath wands and beautiful branches, and also fronds of palm, they offered hymns of thanksgiving to Him who had been given success to the purifying of His holy place. They decreed by public edict, ratified by vote, that the whole nation of the Jews should observe these days every year.
David?
Yes.
Do they also write about the finding of that oil?
Okay, well, we're going to come to that. That's another. See, how am I doing? Yes.
It's a very judgy story.
Are they going to say, who's now using?
No. Let me show you. Because we have a couple stories. One was because they didn't have the menorah that they did something like this. They put swords with cups on for the oil. That was part of one story. Another story is because they didn't have any sanctified lampstands for the 8 days. So they did swords with cups on them. The other one is that they only had one bottle of one cruse of sanctified oil and for 1 day, and it lasted for 8 days. These are both two stories.
But we always talk about them as being apocryphal stories. Do they actually appear in the apocrypha, or has it been sort of created?
No, let's see.
Because what we have to remember, of course, is that when the oil... It wasn't the oil, it was the incense. What was it that God...
It was the oil.
It was the
lighting.
In the Tanakh...
And the lamp.
Sorry?
It was the oil for the menorah.
I know. But you were only allowed to use this very special oil.
Right.
Yes, had to prepare.
And it had to be prepared. And the story is, of course, that they only had one little bit of it. It lasted 8 days when they thought it was only going to do for one.
8 days to prepare new oil.
Oh, is that the case?
And it's a miracle to have that if they go 8 days.
But the interesting thing is the battle in Israel is always that everybody talks about lighting the candles and this is what you have to do and one day after the other and so on and so on and so on. And that is really not the story. Yeah. The really real story is how the faithful stood against the Gentile invasion, defeated the enemy, and then re-sacrificed to the Lord. And
the and
that's the issue.
It's the dedication. You're right. It's the dedication of the temple and the altar. It's a reconsecration after it's been defiled. That's the key. But you're right. See, that's part. And there's all kinds of different stories about the different reasons for it. But the key is this, the rededication. That's for sure.
And it's not just the rededication, David, because, I mean, this is because I'm involved sort of on the right politically, if you like. It's to do with the power of the people or certain people, the leaders, to really stand out against the Hellenization of Israel, which is what the whole battle was about.
See, this, we don't talk about. This is a problem. This could have destroyed. Look around the world of the diaspora, the Jewish people who no longer celebrate the festivals, no longer take any of these. They have lost their Jewish identity.
And even here, it's been on the ground at times.
Yes.
Sorry, when specifically were those things in threat?
This was during this time, the 198, between the one, but it really picked up around 168, 170. Really, they became very violent and were killing. I mean, if a mother circumcised her son, they killed the son, hung him around her neck, and killed her.
And you know, also sort of all the laws about Shabbat, which one of the laws about Shabbat is you can't light fires. And this went on in Muslim countries in North Africa, that if there was not smoke coming out of a chimney on Shabbat, it meant there were Jews there, and they would go in and kill them.
Mm.
And also, if you think about these laws now and the rules that are being passed all the time, many places in Europe are forbidding, for instance, the kosherizing of meat. There's whole arguments going on about the circumcision of children, that it's genital mutilation. And this is really just to undermine Jewish identity, because that of all the things is one of the issues.
But in the same vein, they say challah over all the meat. Yeah. In the UK, all the meat is challah meat in the schools for the Muslims.
Yeah.
You know, and it's anyways.
But I mean, that's part of it's a real battle in our own time. Mm-hmm. And it's not separate from, it's not separate, it's not just, oh my God.
And so, how do we light the candles?
One at a time. I mean, starting from the left or starting from the right?
not so fast, Padawans. There was a great debate on that because the two schools, Shammai and Hillel. Hillel, we follow Hillel's teaching, one at a time. Shammai said, you light them all at once the first day, and then you blow out a candle each day.
Oh, that's interesting. Because I have a friend who said who lights all eight every night.
Yeah.
I like that too.
Yeah.
So there's differences there. But let's go on again. We're talking about the missing here. When we talk about Hanukkah today, what are some of the things that come to your mind first?
Is that what you mean?
Like, you mean Hanukkah?
Yeah.
What are the things we do during Hanukkah?
Well, gelt, but I don't know how that's just a, you know,
I didn't hear
just
that.
A custom.
What's that?
Gelt, Hanukkah gelt.
Oh, Hanukkah gelt.
That's right. What else?
Eating fatty food.
Yeah. Or what would that?
Have ganyot.
But what she's saying here, I want you to understand. That's what people think. It's the dreidel.
Yeah.
All that. But see, this is what happened. They've forgotten what has happened.
That's the battle.
Mm-hmm.
You go back to the United States, we talk about Christmas, and everybody wants to say, oh, it's a pagan holiday and everything, and it's all off. It's because we've forgotten the purpose of what it was about.
Yeah, don't get muddled up with Christmas, because it really is a dodgy issue. the Romans stuck it on the 25th of Kislev, to 25th of the winter month, to satisfy the Christians and to try and bring it all together. And Jesus was born at Sukkot. So.
But the season is what the purpose of what it's about, though, is to celebrate the birth. That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
See, we've got all of this stuff, and we forget. We let all these traditions and other things take us away from the purpose.
Yeah, that's absolutely true.
But when you see Hanukkah, we have learned that you should think like this: Nes Gadol Hayashem.
Nes Gadol Hayah Po or Yes Gadol Hayah Sham. If you're spinning the dreidel somewhere else.
Yes.
So that's, you know, to me, that's what we need to. Any holiday, we get so taken away by all kinds of other things, we forget what it's all about.
That's absolutely true.
And when we forget what it's all about, then we have we're not teaching what we're supposed to be teaching, and we're not teaching to the generations to come what the purpose is all about.
That's very true.
And we see this here. People don't realize how important. It's not so much the holiday, but what happened.
Yes.
How tragic it was.
And the other thing which ties up with Hanukkah, which is what happened in terms of, you know, what happened in terms of the event has got sort of sentimentalized into candles and lighting and eating sukkanyot in exactly the same way as Christmas.
Yeah.
Has got sentimentalized into, I don't know, babies in mangers and whatever, without having any real grasp of, you know, the word became flesh and tabernacled amongst us.
Yeah.
I mean, it is one of the most, it's the most powerful picture and the most powerful thing that can ever happen. And it's sentimentalized into Christmas cards and, oh my goodness, I haven't put the decorations up yet. You know, we haven't got a tree. I mean.
So it's going back to this. And what, just a little FYI, did you notice in the reading what festival, what feast it was seen as being like?
Sukkot. Feast of Tabernacles.
Yeah. They both have lights.
Mm.
You know, the lights were lit in the temple area in Sukkot in the beginning when they light the lamps, and in Hanukkah they're in the home. So it was. It's interesting. One of the Mishnahs was talking about during Hanukkah. There's no grieving.
It's all feasting. Yeah.
It's for a feast. Where was one? I thought it was.
It's interesting because they actually grieved, didn't they, when they saw the state of the.
Yeah.
They tore their clothes.
There was one. Oh, I like this one. In Baba Kama 6:6, it says, a spark which flew out from the hammer and did damage a smith is liable. A camel which was carrying flax and passed by in a public way, and the flax it was carrying got poked into a store and caught fire from the lamp of the storekeeper and set the fire to the building, the owner of the camel is liable. If the storekeeper had left his lamp outside, the storekeeper is liable. And then our Judah says, in the case of the lamp for Hanukkah, he's exempt. But he's got Hanukkah lit. So, but it's a special
people are new here. I don't know if it's new here, but it's really worth going out. Later this week and next week, into the more religious areas like Meir Shearim and places, because everybody lights candles, and many of them do have them outside. They have little boxes outside, and you can see them outside. Other people, especially people from Europe, light them inside, but up against the window. You have to make your light shine. You have to make it. Have to make it seen. I mean, I have two at home. One sitting on a wall where nobody can see it, but it looks pretty. And the other one has to go onto the window on the outside. But if you go into Meir Shearim, especially if you go towards the end of the week or the beginning next Sunday, say, or Monday, it's really amazing because everybody's got six, seven, eight candles lit or have whatever day it is. And Nakhlaut, I'm sure. Yeah.
What about on Bisarel Street? There's one on every light post going down the street.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's all what I call fake. That's an electric one, which they light up like Christmas trees on lampposts in America. It's when you've actually got candles lit in every window that it's great photography if you're into photography.
So you see, the Apocrypha is pretty reliable historically, although they're...
It all depends. It's from book to book.
Yeah.
And in the Apocrypha you have some great things. But then another thing, I think when you're going through the Apocrypha, you see why they weren't canonized. Because there's some things in there that's just...
Dodgy.
Yeah, dodgy is a good way. Hinky. Just not right. But they give you an insight into what the people were thinking at that time. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's the worth of them.
Yeah. But now, when we talk about Maccabees, said about this so-called blind date.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the fact that God sort of stopped doing anything between the end of Malachi and the beginning of sort of
life of Jesus,
Jesus.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's clearly nonsense because we're actually talking about not so much how the people reacted, but just what God was doing.
Yeah.
And historically, we know that the Maccabees did whatever they did, and we know about Antiochus Epiphanes, and we know about the Seleucids, and we know about all these things. So it's a sort of an evidence that God was still at work.
In the Maccabees, especially 1 and 2 is pretty good historical. Then 3 and 4 are kind of like condensing. So 1 Maccabees, then you have this condensing of this history that runs from 198 up to the time of the end of the Hasmonean. And who's the inheritor of the Hasmoneans kingdom? Who is their final?
Herod.
He's in this line. So he's part of this. His father came in and he married one of the Hasmonean princesses, which he later took care of in an unseemly way. As the Romans said, it's better to be a dog than to be one of Herod's relatives. They had a better chance of living too than Herod's relatives. So this is a very, very active and very important period also that we have. Okay?
Yeah.
Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat
Shalom. Happy Hanukkah. I have no idea if this is on or off.